Welcome to Al Berman Live from a studio apartment. And this is a monumental episode, folks. This is episode 100. I can't believe it. I've been doing this show for 100 episodes. Well, 99 until after this one is completed. So maybe let's just complete this. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here, okay? Let's complete this one. And then, once we complete it, we'll have 100. Hard to believe that I've done this many. And I'm going to say something right now. I know I have not been, I was posting regularly for a long time, and about once a week. Only took a break, a couple breaks when I had my hip surgery, and then there was, my mom was sick for a little bit, and I stopped for that time. But now I'm making a commitment to do it once a week again. I'm going back to a once a week schedule. I'm making myself do it. I'm going to discipline myself. And the reason I had a talking to by my good friend, old friend of mine named Dan, who listens to the show. He lives out in New Jersey. And even though I am from New Jersey, I know him from here. See, he's not originally from New Jersey. But you see how Jersey factors into this story? Because I grew up in Jersey. He lives in Jersey. We had a conversation a few days ago, and he just said, dude, listen, I know you joke about only having three listeners, but I think you have, you know, more than that. You have more than that. You don't even know how many listeners you have. And you're losing, what he said is you're losing listeners when you don't post on a weekly basis. And you know what? I respect the guy, and I said to him, I heard what he said. You know, sometimes people say things to you and you don't hear it. You go, yeah. But no, not me. Not me. I hear things. I hear things around here, folks. I'm hearing stuff about you. Anyway, I'm gonna do it. And listen, it's so easy to come up with excuses. And I am still doing the sugar. As a matter of fact, I had some like a Danishy kind of thing right before I put this thing on. While I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, while I was talking to him about how I'm addicted to sugar and I need to get off it, I'm putting sugar in my mouth. but I'm making a commitment. I was going to make a commitment that I'll be off sugar. I'll be back on track by next week. You know what? I'm going to do it. Because I know, because I've been a month on a little bit of a tear. Even though I'm not always doing a lot of it, it doesn't take much to get me off track, and I still need to lose. I've lost weight, but I'm still a chunky guy. I'm a big guy, and I want to lose more weight. I just want to just get as healthy as I possibly can. So I'm making a commitment on here. Hopefully I can stick to it, and if I don't judge me, and I won't judge myself. But I figure I'll declare it here publicly to as many listeners as listening on the internet that by next week, a week from today, when I am sitting down to record another podcast on episode 101, I will be sugar-free, and I will be back into my clean way of eating, and I'll figure it out. I was like trying to figure out, like, can I cut sugar out completely? Should I go back to my cheat moments, my cheat days? Because I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that I get in trouble, which sugar gets me in trouble. I had for the longest time, like about a year, I was having what's called cheat moments. Once a week, for one moment, I would have some ice cream or something, and that was it. And it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. Then, after my second surgery, I read about some guy that was super fat, and he lost a bunch of weight, and he came up with some diet program that he's making a lot of money off of. And he talked about cheat days, and I was like, yeah, cheat day, that appealed to me because, you know, one day where I can have whatever I want and just go crazy like a lunatic. And the problem is, I am a lunatic when it comes to food. So I just, that worked, sort of worked, but not as good as the cheat moments as far as in terms of, I think as far as in terms of weight loss. It just seems like I've got to get this food thing going here, folks. I used to do some very dark stuff. I won't get into it now. Come see me live and in concert, and I will talk about all kinds of dark things. but with clean language. That's the kind of comedian I am. Anyway, so I am, I'm going, my whole point is, I could use sugar, which I was using before. Like, I'm on sugar, and I'm doing this, and I'm depressed, and blah, 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 blue. And I got lazier and lazier, and it feeds on itself. And, you know, I have one little talking to him, good friend Dan, and I go like, you know what? He's right. And I talked to my, I didn't talk to my therapist about this yet. I'll be talking to her, because I talked to her the day before. Oh, I got a lot to talk to her about. Oh, you bet you, baby. Ooh, you bet you, something nice. Okay, here come the politically correct police going, he's doing a racial thing here. No, it's racial, but it's not racist. We are different races, folks, and we sound differently. Just like my grandfather spoke like this. Okay, my grandfather was like this. Hey, what are you doing? All right. I'm a little bit sore about the politically correct stuff lately because I've been the recipient in some areas of the politically correct police, and I won't go into it now, but it's just astounding what people choose to be offended by. Some people, what they're doing is they're looking for things to be offended by. The problem is they're not very bright, okay? And I've said this before, I've quoted my friend Deb. She says that the world is being run by C-minus students. And there's a lot of C-minus students that are patrolling around looking for things to be offended. But as I was just talking to my friend Tom, and I said, Tom, you know what? If we're so darn smart, which I think we are, people like you, me, Deb, and people like that, then let's take it back from the C-minus students. Let's sign a petition. Take back the world from the C-minus students. Oh my God, I get so many petitions online that I got to sign. And some of them are very heart-wrenching, and I sign them, and sometimes you hear that it did do some good. But some of them are like just wacky, like, you know, just certain things. Like, it's almost like if Ted Bundy, the serial killer, was alive. You know, tell Ted Bundy to stop killing people. You know, sign a petition. It's kind of on that level. Like, it's just like, really? I'm just going to send tell McDonald's to stop being greedy, and, you know, which is, God, this country is in trouble. If we don't get, people have to make a livable wage. Look at how I'm just rambling on. You know why? I am so jacked up on sugar, folks. I got some Danish in me. Ooh, that sounds a little risque. That sounds a little risque. Anyway. Okay. Some sad news on a sad note. Yesterday, comedian David Brenner passed away, and one of my true comedy heroes. Never got to meet him, but did have an exchange with him via email and on Twitter. Actually, he sought me out on Twitter, which was quite thrilling. But I saw him when I was just a young'un in a little comedy duo. Out in Brooklyn, we were auditioning one night, and he was preparing for one of his Tonight Show, I think his third Tonight Show appearance, something like that. I had never heard of him, and I was like, wow, man, that guy's funny, and he's on TV, and blah, blah, blah. And I know he was a mentor to people like Freddie Prinze and Richard Lewis and people like that. Not Freddie Prinze Jr. for youngins. There was a guy named Freddie Prinze who was a very, very charismatic and famous comedian. A long time ago, but and he's no longer with us. So another story. But anyway, David Brenner was first truly observational comedian, the guy that would, you know, point things out like, hey, look at that. I think he was the first one with the do you ever notice? I think even before Carlin started doing that too, but I think that Brenner might even predate that because Carlin had some other incarnations. How's that? And Brenner was on TV back in the day all the time. The Mike Douglas Show, the Tonight Show. He did more Tonight Shows with Johnny Carson, like 150 or something like that, or more than anybody and any other. I think any other guest, let alone comedian. So I was really sad to hear of his passing, and. I did get in touch with him because, you know, he wrote books, and I've read several of his books, and I had always heard that, see, he'd been a documentary director or producer or something like that. I think he won an Emmy or an Oscar, or he won something, some award for some documentary. And then he gave that up, I believe, because he wanted to become a stand-up comedian. And from his first open mic until his first appearance on The Tonight Show, it took only 19 months. Because these days, you know, when people talk about comedians, they say, oh, it takes 10 years to find your voice and this and that. And there's no absolutes, folks. There's no absolutes in this world. If whenever people tell you, take it in, see if it's true, does it ring true, if in, or whatever, and then disregard if it doesn't. If it does, take it in. And, I mean, he did it in 19 months where, I mean, sure, his voice developed as he went on because he was just going to become more mature and more experienced. But nonetheless, 19 months it took him. And I had heard or read, or both, that he had an amazing work ethic, that he worked so hard and that was the reason, you know, that he progressed so quickly. And, I had this idea. I thought he'd written all these books. Me, as a veteran comedian and a student of comedy, thought that why doesn't he write a book about that era? Call it 19 months, you know, and start from, you know, his first open mic or when he quit his job, and then this documentary guy, and then from there to his first Tonight Show. And I first sent him an email to like a email, like something I saw on his website or something. And I never heard back. And then we became friends on Facebook. And pretty sure I went to him. I don't think he came to me. Although Tom Dreesen asked me to be his friend on Facebook, which was quite nice. I emailed him and I made my pitch again. Now, I had no vested interest in it. Other than the fact that I wanted to know about it, okay? I wasn't going to, you know, it's like volunteer to write it with him or try to get involved in it somehow. I just thought, like, write this book. I want to see this book. And so I wrote him another email, and then he actually wrote me back, and he was, you know, and I told him the first time I saw him was in Pips, and he seemed like kind of nostalgic. Oh, yeah, that was a great place and blah, blah, blah. But he told me, he thanked me, I believe, and he said that, you know, that's a great idea. But he felt that the business had changed so much that it wouldn't, it just didn't make sense to do it. And I countered that with, I disagree with you, my friend. I didn't say my friend. I say I disagree because my understanding is that you had this amazing work ethic, and that transcends any time, period. You know, and you're part of the history of comedy. It just was... It's part of the history of comedy. And I said, but I did say to him, listen, I'm not going to bug you anymore. I've made my case. It's just something I was interested in. And that was it. And then at some point when I was on Twitter, I posted something about the Dalai Lama. And he started to screw with me. Brenner came back and started to bust my chops a little bit about, and we had this little exchange, and I was just like, man, David Brenner and I are like freaking going back and forth. And I had this fantasy in my head that at some point, man, we'd sit down and you know, I'd meet him somewhere at least, and I'd make the pitch again about him doing the book. And now it's never going to happen. It's unfortunate, you know, because I think it would have been a great piece of comedy history. But you know, that's what it is. But, you know, I didn't know the guy personally, and like I said, I never met him. Didn't know he was sick, and now he's gone. So, R.I.P., Mr. Brenner. You truly were one of the greats. And he was good friends with a guy named Steve Landisberg, who also passed away a couple years ago or so, and he was truly one of the greats. So, one thing, whether you're great or not, well, whether you're one of the truly greats or not, we're all going to go. That's right, folks. We're all going to go to the place where there's Rodney Dangerfield. In his autobiography, I think it was. Yeah, I believe it was. He said, because he was getting near, you know, he's pretty old, and he might have been sick at that point. I'm not sure. or maybe he was just philosophizing about death. But he said one of the things he said he couldn't imagine was being in a place where there was not being able to have Chinese food again. And I thought that was very endearing because I totally related. And the kind of Chinese food he's meaning is the East Coast Chinese food that I grew up with. It's a completely different Chinese food than we have out here. At least the Chinese food that I know of in my immediate area. Now, where the real Chinatown is, in the San Gabriel Valley, they got a different kind of Chinese food, which I believe is a higher quality Chinese food than in the Chinatown in L.A., because the Chinatown in L.A. is just like, they've given up down there. They've given up. It's just not happening. But the Chinese food he's talking about, you know, he's from New York, New Jersey, like where I'm from. And, he was Jewish. The Jews and the Chinese are very, very connected, especially back there. And you go on a Sunday to a Chinese restaurant, one word is you're going to scan the restaurant, and one word is going to come into your mind, and that word will be Jews. The place is filled with Jews. We love us some Chinese food. And another comic friend mentioned something called duck sauce. They don't have that out here. Duck sauce, which is something that you get in like you put on like spare ribs, and it's kind of sweet. You know, I don't see no duck sauce out here. Where's the and it's not from ducks. I don't know why they call it duck sauce, but they don't have any duck sauce. I want some duck sauce. I demand duck sauce, folks. Okay. Alrighty. So. I've been going to the, I told you I've been going to this supermarket, Albertsons, getting their chicken. I'm going to go there today because actually I have to go to the vitamin store, which is right in the same complex there. And then I'm going to go get some chicken and some other things. I got to be careful because that's why I'm making a commitment now. By next week, I'm going to be, when I record this podcast, my food will be clean. I'll be on some kind of program because I need to rein it in. I need to discipline myself, just like I'm doing this right now. I could have laid around and or done nothing and or whatever. I could have blown this off again, but took the advice of a good friend, and here I am. So, but Albertsons, I've mentioned this before, have the most unashamedly overweight people I've ever seen. I'm talking about 500-pound people. Not just somebody that's a couple hundred, 300 pounds. 500-pound people waddling through the store in couples, combined poundage, 800-900 bucks, pound, 800-900 pounds, walking around unashamedly overweight. You know, saying things like, "We have enough butter at home. I gotta get more cheese, honey. I'm gonna go get the cigarettes, the beer, and no, don't get the lettuce. Don't get anything green." Just amazing. And my feeling is, if you're gonna be overweight, bring some shame into it. You know, be self-conscious. Be like me. I've always been self-conscious, even when I wasn't overweight. When I wasn't overweight, I thought I was overweight. And then when I get, like now, the weight I'm at now, sometimes I don't think I'm overweight. And it's just like, no, I'm still overweight. You're fooling yourself. I'm always the opposite of, you know, so now I'm trying to get real, you know, like real with myself here. Anyway, I'm going to go over there. And they got this woman that works in a service deli that will give you the largest samples of chicken. They have a great tri-tip. And she cut off a hunk of tri-tip the other day. There was another lady that was waiting there, that she was waiting on at the service deli as well. And it was an African-American lady. And I'm going to say, before you politically correct people, start to take me, you know, why are you saying she's African American? I'll tell you, there's a point to this story and why I mentioned that. So she gave me a piece, and she gave the lady a piece, but she gave the lady a bigger piece, which I noticed. Now, this lady was a slender lady, and she looked at me, and she goes, "You know what, this is too big for me. Let's switch." And I go, "Gladly." And then, you know, it was so amazing. And then we started talking about, like, how much, like, what she gave me was like a portion that you would get in a restaurant, you know. And there was another lady there, like another day, like the day before or a couple days before, and she was African-American. She works there. She's a service deli. And she was not very nice. There were three people waiting, and I was a fourth. And I just said, do I take a number? And she was very, like, kind of hostile. Like, eh, just, you're number four. Just wait there. And I was like, okay. And so I was mentioning to the service deli lady was giving us the big samples that there's another lady that works there and she's not very nice. And I didn't say what she looked like or anything. And then me and the African-American lady started talking. And I said, I didn't even know the other lady's name. But at one point, the African-American lady said to me, she goes, sometimes, how did she put it? Sometimes black people have a problem with the world or something like that. It was sort of, that was the gist of it. Sometimes, and I was like, am I hearing this correctly? And I said, how do you know who I'm talking about is a black person? She goes, I know who you mean. I've been here before. It's that black lady. And I go, yeah, that's true. But I said to her, I was uncomfortable with a black person, I don't know, how do you put it? Like, she was kind of putting herself, her group down. Well, anyway, I wanted to come up with an example where it wasn't black people are the worst, people to wait on you. When I started to think of, there's an older white lady with the biggest butt I've ever seen. She just has one of the strangest shaped bodies. And maybe that's why she's so angry. She works in a service deli over at Gelson's. And she is so mean that I know a guy, and I'm with this guy now, that if I have my number and I'm in line and she calls that number, I will not say it's me. I usually won't. Once in a while I will, but I usually won't. I call her the angry güero. Güero is like slang, and I think it might be Mexican slang for white people. And I always call her the angry güero to all the Latinos that work there. Oh, please don't send me to the angry güero. And they laugh about that. But I told this lady, I said, well, there's a lady over at Gelson's, a white lady, and she's, really mean. Really mean. So it's just, we're just talking about unhappy people. So it's got nothing to do with racial stuff. And I just felt uncomfortable having somebody, it's just like it would be like me walking around going, I hate when Jewish people, just won't give to charities. When it turns out that Jews happen to be some of the most philanthropic people on the earth. But don't ask me for any money right now. Okay, God, I'm going on and on and on and on. And on, where am I going next? I don't know, this could be it, folks. This could be the, I called AT&T this week. I wanted to get my bill adjusted. Because I didn't have any service for a week. My landline, because of the rains, and so I got it. So I got the bill adjusted, and right before the lady hung up, she said, don't text and drive. And it's just like, yeah, thanks. Right now I'm sitting at home. I mean, it's just, she just could have easily said, remember, eat your vegetables. Remember, get off the sugar. Remember, don't drink alcohol. Remember, don't smoke cigars and cigarettes. I don't know. Another thing, I keep getting these messages on my email that people I don't know are sharing with me on Google. I don't know what they mean by that. I don't know these people, and I don't know where on Google they're sharing with me. I don't understand what they're talking about. If anybody knows, please let me know. All right. I think I've pretty much done my show here, folks, for this week, and I feel pretty good about it. Whether it's funny, I don't know. Whether it's mildly interesting and amusing, I'm pretty sure it is. See how confident I am? That's a new confidence I have here. I'm not going to be self-conscious. Well, sometimes I'll be self-conscious because you have to be. Keeps you in check, baby. Keeps you in check, man. All right, listen. Thank you, anyone who's listening. Like I said, I've recommitted to a schedule. I'm sticking to my schedule, and that's that. That's it. I want to thank you again for listening, and until next time, next week, this is Al Berman live from a studio apartment.